And that's the end of our little dance through Buddhism and magic, through the three great phases. So let's head west. Let's head back into the west and to the magical tradition in the west. Again, I was really looking forward to doing this bit because this is one of my favourite things, one of my favourite periods. So you might remember that a couple of weeks ago we looked at the whole business of desire, sexual morality, morality in general, all behaviour that's based on moving towards what you want because you like it, because it feels good, because you've built up a habit of that. And then everything that can go wrong when everybody tries to do that at the same time, as if they are the centre of the world. Something gives, eventually. Reality comes up and hits you on the face like a comedy floorboard. You stand on it and poof, off it goes. So we looked at that in the context of St. Augustine. St. Augustine has been one of the key points where the theistic Christian tradition takes the Platonic idea of there being some kind of reality beyond this one, some kind of world of perfect form and perfect beauty beyond the mundane, and ascribes that to the relationship between the human body and the exalted body of God. And then the problems that start to come in when it comes to relating to your natural desires, which are all perfectly fine and valid. Now, Augustine partly gets that idea from the Neoplatonists, who were 3rd century guys who rediscovered the works of Plato and this idea of another beautiful reality. And I think it gets a little bit twisted in Christianity, it goes wrong somewhere. Again, that's from a certain point of view. If you've got the time and the inclination, you could probably go and work with all that stuff. But it is quite hard work to make it into something positive. There are much easier routes to the positive moment with all this. The path of least resistance, as the Zen people would say. And we're going to fast forward from that time to early 16th century Italy and to the city of Florence. Now, in the city of Florence in early 16th century, a guy called Lorenzo de' Medici founds an academy. And this academy and the people who work through it go on to become known as the Renaissance Neoplatonists. Again, some fantastic books on this. If you'd like to know more, you can ask me online or I'll try and post some resources. And Lorenzo de' Medici has got lots of wealth and he is a patron of the arts, and he decides to found this academy that's going to promote a deepening of human learning and a raising up of human beings out of the dark ages. And he puts a relatively young man in charge of his academy called Marsilio Ficino, who's a bit of a hero of mine, of a certain kind. And Ficino's making the academy a place where you can study and rediscover the works of Aristotle and of Plato and of Plotinus and the early Neoplatonists. And they're doing all that in the context of Christianity. But Ficino has a young apprentice. It all gets very Star Wars at this point. He's got a young apprentice called Giovanni Pico della Mirandola. Pico della Mirandola, could you imagine that was your name? What will we call him? Let's call him Pico. Pico della Mirandola. So Pico della Mirandola eventually does kind of fall out with his master a little bit and goes his own way. But Mirandola is a bit of a genius. And one of the areas that he promotes through his own study of Aristotle and some of the greats that have gone before him, including figures like Roger Bacon in 13th century England, one of the things that he promotes is something called natural magic. And I want to look at natural magic as a basis for looking at meditation and a basis for the kind of work that goes on in Buddhist practice.